And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we are doing a group experiment in Zoom recording for a show with the Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's. And with us today, Rob McCreary. He is back. He is Executive Director. We have clinical therapist Nan Bernardo Freeman and Karen Beltran, and clinical case managers Jennifer Castaneda and Melissa Feliciano. And welcome all. Hello.
Hi.
Well, we have never tried a multiple Zoom like this, so this is true experimental radio. Rob, you've been on this show before, so let's get started with you. Would you give us the background? Tell us about it.
Absolutely. We're a multidisciplinary team-based nonprofit 501c3 human service organization that serves the Wilmington, primarily northern Newcastle County area. With the pandemic, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit, we're now hopefully reaching into Kent and Sussex counties. We started in 2003. Sister Teresa Litz, our founder, started as a grassroots operation out of the St. Paul's Rectory to work with the mainly Hispanic population in within about an 8-block area, and it's grown immensely. The last couple of years, we've really kind of built out the infrastructure and our operating model and our service delivery model. We've added a bunch of staff. We've got a great team. You'll learn a little bit more about those folks today and the services that we offer. We're non-discriminatory. We offer service to anyone, regardless of their ethnic, racial, religious, marital preference, sexual orientation, disability, or income and level or ability to pay, or cultural background beliefs. Pretty much our core target market is a mostly impoverished and Hispanic population. Our core capabilities are bilingual, culturally responsive counseling and case management. We'll talk a little bit more about that as well. And just great to be here.
Let's talk about your clientele. You started off with a neighborhood, and it was a mainly Hispanic Latino neighborhood, and you saw the need to provide services in a language that would be more culturally responsive to them, and it has grown from there. So do you want to talk about who you're serving? Who do you see, ladies? Who do you see?
So our primary target market, our core target market, is the Latino population, but our doors are open to everybody. We serve a diverse array of what I would say challenges and opportunities within individual needs and within the family, too. I know that our clinical therapist, Steve, and they live this every day. I'm going to actually segue over to either Nan or Karen. Maybe they could talk a little bit about, give some examples of who it is we serve and then, you know, what kind of behavioral and treatment approaches do we deliver.
Karen, would you like to start?
Sure. I am under a program called Victims of Crime Survivors. So pretty much my caseload is about individuals who have faced crime sometime in their life or who have even just witnessed it. And we work with individuals who have witnessed a robbery or homicide, or they have lived through domestic violence. So right now we are mainly doing telehealth, but we're going to be opening soon. Like I said, our clients are victim survivors of crime, and they're mainly, my caseload is it's bilingual, it's Spanish and English.
Nan or Karen, a lot of your clientele I know have come to America as refugees from violence in their native country.
Yes, most of our clients have some kind of a trauma background from early childhood, whether it is communal, from their communities, witnessing public violence, or coming from within the home of abuse, domestic violence, emotional, sexual, physical, psychological, manipulation. So it's coming from within the family and around the family as well. And a lot of them have risked their lives crossing the border and have had traumatic experiences crossing the border to get here. You know, and what we find is that trauma begets more trauma, so that oftentimes a person who has been traumatized somehow ends up, I don't want to say they recreate their own trauma, but they can tend to find themselves in other traumatic situations. And so what we do as therapists is we try to teach them skills and teach them just to help them think about their self-care with compassion, because we do find that compassion is, you know, is a healing factor in their lives. When they start to incorporate that for themselves, then greater healing can come in. And I think, you know, however, there are probably many different definitions of culturally responsive, but I think for me, two words that come to mind would be humility, because I'm learning from my clients, regardless of their own culture, national culture, they even have their own family culture, and learning that culture from them and treating them with respect and compassion.
Well, let's talk about then family trauma, because every family has its own dynamics, regardless of the background and all of that. Talk about the programming that you offer for families, because it's everything from interpersonal relationships. You treat depression. You look at all kinds of situations there. What are the programs that you offer?
So I can jump into that. There's two primary programs we offer. It's outpatient behavioral, mental health, and that's counseling and in case management. I would also venture to say it's not a fully blown program yet, but it's definitely an asset that I consider for the community. And that it's the building of the pipeline of bilingual, culturally responsive therapists, actually. And that's through our internship program. I kind of consider that in my own mind a developing program unto itself, because it's so important that there's such a severe gap and shortage with behavioral health professionals. And then when you look at that funnel, so to speak, you can picture it in your mind as that funnels down. When you look at the shortage or the provider to client ratio shortage just with bilingual counselors that are licensed, you're going to see, you know, a huge disparity, a huge gap. And that's one of the issues that we're trying to address. And we've done a pretty good job with that. I give our clinical team and our clinical director, Kathleen Stipel, kudos for just bringing that, what I call, again, a program sort of into fruition and, you know, kind of rolling sort of now, sort of on its own. We've got a lot of work to do yet in developing it, but I think, you know, it goes without saying that I think it's made an impact in the community. Over the last 6 years, we've been able to develop professionals, some who have stayed with us and some who have gone to other organizations, but I think that's a key core sort of component under our umbrella. When we talk about outpatient therapy, what Nan had talked about, working with individuals and working with families, often we find that there's, you know, we could be working with a child and then find out that the parents have certain issues. And then from there, you know, what other things are they dealing with? Our case managers, that program is huge in helping to connect our clients to critical resources in the community, whether it's shelter, utilities, food, education, particularly jobs. Right now with this pandemic, we could talk a little bit about that. The effects of that has really focused our attention more on case management, I would venture to say. When we first experienced the first couple of weeks of the pandemic going back, we closed our offices on March 13th, and we're hoping to reopen sometime mid-June. We probably had a 70% drop-off in fee-for-service clients or people coming into the office. It's kind of ironic because, Laura, I think the last time that we were on, we were talking about finishing the building, that the project renovation, our new home, so to speak. And we did do that. We moved in late January, only to find ourselves out on March 13th. So we haven't really gotten acquainted and really settled in with the building. We're hoping to get back in there and, you know, hoping to get people to come in. We're putting precautions and safety measures according to CDC and state monitoring compliance regulations, that so that, you know, we keep safety and health as a top priority for our clients and for our staff. But I could probably hand it off a little bit to probably one of the case managers or the clinicians again and just talk about two types of case management that we do. One is primarily focused on more of a holistic, you know, connecting people to those critical care, those critical services, resources in the community. And then that's Melisa. That's her area of specialty. And then Jennifer Castaneda, she is our legal liaison. So she works with a lot of immigration issues. And there's a huge gap in services in the state with that, actually across the nation. And she's done a great job with that. So I don't know if you guys want to talk a little bit just about the case management role and how that plays an integral part in how we deliver our services.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob. Melissa, is it okay if I I go first?
Go ahead.
So a little bit of what I do, Melissa and I roll, it is a little bit similar. However, we do take care of different types. What, in regards to the needs, they are similar, but our role is a little bit different. So what I do is I offer legal resources for victims of crime. And that really ranges from whether they had, like Karen had also mentioned, since she's part of that program, it ranges from if someone has gone through some type of crime or experience in when they were like 3 years old, 5 years old, or if it happened yesterday or a couple years or months ago, we're still able to see them. So what that consists of with me is I basically assist a little bit more. I've found a little bit more, I guess, common ground on family law. So I assist a little bit more on family law. It ranges from like divorce, connecting them to a legal agency or an attorney for like custody if needed, PFAs, and PFAs stand for protection from abuse. I personally assist them on that. And then apart from family law, I also assist with immigration. I've even had a case for civil rights and some also criminal law. So the variety ranges in reality. However, you did mention, Laura, you did ask Nan and Karen about that majority of people who have experienced some type of crime back in their home country. I'm glad you kind of mentioned that because I work with hand on hand with attorneys from DVLS, Delaware Volunteer Legal Services, and we actually have a good handful of cases where they call it SIJ cases. So that means special immigrant juvenile status. So those kids who have came from who have escaped in reality, crime from their country and seek refuge here in the US. So I also help facilitate that communication a little bit more with the attorneys and the children.
Melissa, do you want to address the intake process? Because everybody keeps talking about that holistic approach. And if you are dealing with everything from living conditions, job, et cetera, family trauma and all that, how do you break down the situation or how do you set out to help these people?
Okay. When the client comes to our offices, mainly they're coming for therapy. But then we know there's underlying things that they're going through that they need to solve to be able for the therapy to be able to be effective. So that's where I see my role. So what we do is in the intake process, we ask them about their trauma that they have experienced. Also, that if they have any needs being connected to community resources, for example, food, clothing, housing, jobs. And then our intake coordinator, we have a person in charge of that. And she directed to either, if it's one of those needs, she direct them to me. And then if they don't have any of those needs, then they are referred or directed to one of the therapists. Sometimes they have legal issues as well. And that's when they are referred to Jen. But in my case, I help them with all those basic needs that they need for therapy to be effective.
If I can just jump in for a minute just to say, therapy is, I guess you could say it's one part of the support that a client needs. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient, especially when clients don't have their material needs met. And then on top of that, if they have suffered some kind of criminal offense or, domestic violence, abuse, having that legal support. And, it's sort of like by way of analogy, a three-legged stool that creates a support for our clients to be able to just thrive in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I find what Melissa and I do to be indispensable. We often work with mutual clients and, I am so grateful for the work that they do.
it is hard to treat a trauma when someone is hungry or worried about where they will sleep, or they are worried about their residence status, et cetera. You can't treat a trauma if they're continually being traumatized by other sources.
Besides referrals, because I refer them a lot to community resources, also I accompany them sometimes because of their language barrier. Sometimes I go as an interpreter and go with them to the offices that they need to go, like social service offices or employment offices, wherever they need the help. If they don't have anybody else that can advocate for them, I'm there with them. I even help them study for the learner's permit. And sometimes that's a need for them, and they can do it on their own. And I go to the DMV office with them, whatever they need to succeed.
Hey, if you're just joining us, this is an experiment in Zoom radio. I'm Laura Lewis. This is Focus on the Delaware Valley. And today we are talking to staff from the Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's. You can reach them at stpaulscounseling.org. That's stpaulscounseling.org. The number 302-576-4136. But go to stpaulscounseling.org. And today we're talking to the Executive Director, Rob McCreary, Nan Bernardo Freeman, and Karen Beltran. They are clinical therapists, and clinical case managers Jennifer Castaneda and Melissa Feliciano. Again, stpaulscounseling.org, the place to go for that. Now, we've been talking about cultural differences. Within a family, you can have a grandmother, a grandfather, or a parent who came here as a refugee, fleeing trauma, violence, crime, persecution in their home. You have children who are born here, maybe children who were brought here as young children. You have children who speak this language. Some maybe are not comfortable in their family's language. You've got a big mix, and they're all living together. And what the heck? How do you treat mixed families like this, where maybe, again, some are legal residents, some may just be overextended, some may have no paperwork at all? You have a clientele that have very unique situations, and now you're doing it remotely.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if I might jump in, I'm just thinking about when, you know, my wife and I, when we started our family, we shared her parents' house, or they shared it with us, rather. We lived with them for 6.5 years, and it went pretty smooth, I got to tell you. I think about that and some of the difficulties that we had, and it's not even on the same planet as some of what our clients are going through, you know, just with the anxiety and the fears and some of the other issues. On top of that, now you've got the pandemic. You've got people that were scared to come forward and seek services before the pandemic even hit. And now, you know, you've got everything that's going on top of that, so that it's escalated. I just keep thinking back to, you know, the points in my head that I usually leave when I talk to somebody, whether it's a community organizer or a funder or somebody, maybe a partner that we're going to work with. You know, what would the community lack if the Family Counseling Center wasn't here? And I think about, you know, the folks that were able to provide access to care for. These are really at-risk robbers, like we were talking, victims of crime, immigrants. They're all challenged by cultural, language, stigmatic, financial, employment now more than ever, educational, healthcare barriers. The fact that our staff is bilingual is great. I think the most important fact is being culturally responsive and the way that we build trust with the people that we help and the way that they trust us. I think that's a two-way street. I think that without that trust, nothing gets done. You can't form that relationship, and they can't depend on you, and we can't depend on them without that. And I think I just want to give kudos to our team. They're passionate, compassionate, they're dedicated, and they're resilient, especially in the face of not just this pandemic, but the stuff that they see every day that our clients face, and they're holding their hands going through it. And that's not an easy task. And, you know, I can see that in their faces, and I can see it when we have our team meetings, and I can hear it. And that's what I'm really appreciative of. So I think if we weren't here, that's what the community wouldn't have in place. And I think that's a huge thing. So, you know, getting back to what you were talking about, we're about just, yeah, that whole mix. That's what I think started us out, the seed that was planted by Sister Teresa when we first start to form. That's been the consistent sort of opportunity and challenge, if you will, in helping the community and helping the population that we serve. And we're going to keep doing that. This pandemic has knocked us back a bit. We've had some really good people on our side even before the pandemic, and we're still working with them. We have new opportunities now. We can reach people in areas, hopefully with telemedicine, telehealth, that we haven't been able to do. We're going to take that cautiously. And I say that out of respect to the people that we want to reach, because it is a different population. It's a different group of Latino population in Sussex and Kent County. And we have to kind of tread through the waters and figure out how do we build that trust with them, and how do we build it with the providers that are in that area so we can be a complement to their services. I think that's really key. Again, I think it goes back to our team, and I think their dedication. Without that, we have nothing. We can't even begin to take the next step. And, you know, I'm just proud of our team.
How has telehealth worked for you as therapists and as case managers? Do people trust it enough to make it work in this situation? And is there enough access to the devices?
Yeah, so for telehealth on my end, it's actually worked great. Even beforehand, I would still try to accommodate to the client's schedules. So whether that's them just being able to do a phone appointment, obviously now I try to utilize our system more since it is HIPAA compliant. So, I mean, in my perspective, it has worked great and they like it a little bit more since they are able to get on it quicker instead of having to drive somewhere. Some people will do it like during lunch in their car, or they'll just hop outside if their kids are inside. So it's worked pretty well on my half.
What I've noticed is we actually took a survey of our clients to see how comfortable they were with continuing with the telehealth or the phone sessions. And the vast majority are very pleased with it. It definitely has benefits in terms of travel. It's certainly safer. But by way of caveat, it's not the be all end all. Oftentimes we have technical problems where we just cannot connect. So we have to rely on the phone. And also clinically, telehealth is not a one size fits all. Not everybody is suited for it, depending on the severity of what they're going through. So it does require, you know, being very verbal, being very talkative. And if you're working with young children, the best way to engage, or even, you know, not so young children, is really through play, through drawing, which is much better suited for being in the office. I was talking with Sister Teresa, and she had read that telehealth is probably more convenient for clients than it is for the therapist. So it really does. It absolutely makes therapy more accessible. It's just not the perfect solution, and it's not going to fit everybody.
Are you seeing more calls? Is this for Jen and for Melissa? Are you seeing more calls now as people are, they're reaching the end of their rope? You know, they're finally picking up the phone because the pandemic situation has finally made them say, I need help.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. I think it's not just our agency, but towards the beginning when the whole pandemic was going on, when it was starting, we were trying to communicate with a lot of our partners, and we did see a decrease in calls. And we came to the conclusion that the only reason for that was that information out there that we are still able to do telehealth, or other agencies are able to do telehealth, wasn't out there just yet. So I think little by little, it's picking back up. So I believe we talked to our admissions coordinator, and she did mention that it is picking back up little by little now that our services are being offered as telehealth and that we are so open, because I think clients got a little bit confused as if, oh, they're probably closed, they're not serving right now. But we're trying our best to promote and offer our services, especially via telehealth, and kind of utilize this tool.
Mm-hmm. I have experience is a lot of previous clients calling me. So on my end, I receive a lot more phone calls because of the pandemic. They mean that they have lost their job, or they don't have food and they need food. So I have had a lot of return customers, and I'm glad that they feel comfortable enough to reach out, because some of them, it might have been 3 months ago that I assessed, and they were comfortable enough to call and say, I need help. I need I need your assistance.
That's building that trust that you talked about. Rob, yeah. we're starting to run out of time, so we've got to start winding this up. How can the public help at this point? Obviously, the doors are shut for right now as we're recording this today. The doors are mm-hmm. still closed, and mm-hmm. accessibility is going to be a little off. And so, fundraising, et cetera, things that you would have normally done are postponed. What are you looking for right now? And what could your partners use right now? How can we help in any fashion?
Sure. When it comes down to donations, I would say there's two primary ways that it can help us and other agencies who need critical help right now. There's a strategic response fund, and that's being spearheaded through the Philanthropy Delaware, Delaware Community Foundation, Delaware Alliance for Nonprofit Advancement, otherwise known as DANA, all great groups, and United Way. And you can commit, you know, your donations to them through the Strategic Response Fund or United Way Fund. There's two pieces to that. If you go on the website at Delaware Community Foundation and United Way, you'll see opportunities to give. We have directly benefited from funding from those funds. You can always give right to us too. We're not going to say don't do that. I want to give you a quick thank you to our individual donors. We've done a couple direct mail campaigns, and I'm sure they know who they are. I often hear that they're JBR listeners, so I just want to give a shout out to them and to the Strategic Response Fund and the folks and the foundations, corporations, and individuals who've given through that. Again, you can go to our website, stpaulscounseling.org, and make a donation directly. Or you can go again to the Strategic Response Fund, and that helps out not only us, but it helps out all these other terrific agencies in the community, a lot of whom which are our partners, and it kind of diversifies the funding spread, if you will, you know, and keeps it real that way. I think there's so many of us in the nonprofit sector right now that are hurting, and it's uncertainty, and I know everybody's feeling that same way. We just want to be able to be sustainable, continue our operations. That's the main goal. No cuts, no furloughs. There's no way I'm going to allow that with the team that we have. They just make too much of an impact. That's my personal perspective. And I know that, you know, our board shares that feeling too, and our funders. That's the goal, to get through, keep sustainable, keep helping as many people as we can. Again, if you want to go to our website to make a donation, by all means, we appreciate it. We're grateful for it. And then also, please think about the Strategic Response Fund, United Way funds that are set up. I think they're doing a lot of great work that way. And I guess just keep us in your prayers, and we'll do the same for you. I think that's the best thing that we can do right now. We will get through this. It's a tough situation, but it makes us more resilient, and there are opportunities. And I think that's what we got to keep our head up, keep looking forward to. If we can reach people again in Sussex and Kent County that we weren't able to reach before, and work with some of the agencies down there that don't offer the services we offer, but we can be a complement to them, then I think we're doing our job, and I think that we're fulfilling our mission. So,
and you know what? You can't beat that. That's a great close. And of course, the place to go is stpaulscounseling.org. For Family Counseling Center of St. Paul's online, stpaulscounseling.org. Thank you to my guest today. It's Executive Director Rob McCreary, Clinical Therapist Nan Bernardo Freeman, Karen Beltran, and Clinical Case Managers Jennifer Castaneda and Melissa Feliciano. Everybody, thank you. And let's do this again when we're all together. It's been a great experiment, and I want to thank you all.
You got it.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.